Is anybody here seen my old friend Abraham? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seems the good they die young. You know, I just looked around and he's gone. Anybody here seen my old friend John? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seems the good they die young. I just looked around and he's gone. Has anybody here seen my old friend Martin? Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seems the good they die young. I just looked around and he's gone. Didn't you love the things that they stood for? Didn't they try to find some good for you and me? And we'll be free someday soon. It's gonna be one day. Has anybody here seen my old friend Bobby? Can you tell me where he's gone? I thought I saw him walking up over the hill with Abraham and Martin and John. This past Tuesday was the anniversary of Bobby Kennedy's death, so I thought that would be an appropriate lead-off song. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, also on revolution.radio, and you can even listen on our site, newdream.us, and we try to keep our archives pretty current there, only 2 or 3 weeks back. Welcome to the show, and I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Ava Bird, Mickey Z, Azura Crispino, Frank Rodero, and Philip Ferruggio. So this Thursday evening we are gathering for the New American Dream radio show in Fort Lauderdale, in northern Minnesota, in Des Moines, in Port Orange, Florida, in Los Angeles, in Austin, Texas, in Astoria, Queens, New York City, and wherever you are. My recommended list for today, kind of long, James Tracy's Memory Hole blog, memoryholeblog.org. The current one, you can find these articles. The Boston Globe's hit piece on the assassination of Senator Robert F. Kennedy. DHS moving to police journalists, bloggers, media influencers. Las Vegas police release Mandalay rooftop footage of Route 91 massacre. Also, Jim Fetzer's blog, jamesfetzer.blogspot.com. Also, Scott Creighton's blog, AmericanEveryman.com. Also, False Flag Weekly News, and they'll come on tomorrow morning on No Lies Radio. Also, Debbie Lusignan. Find her videos on BitChute, the Sane Progressive. Also recommended as suitable for American viewing, Rachel Tobias' article, The Parkland Massacre Puzzle, at Medium.com. Also on YouTube, The Truth, Why Modern Music is Awful. also on YouTube, Snow Walker Prime Channel, UFOs are humanity's greatest discovery. And on the Cabin Talk channel, check out the latest entitled, These Are a Few Things That Bother the Heck Out of Me. Spend some time with Claudia. Also recommended any interview on YouTube with John Lennon. And finally, I highly recommend the Israel issue of Pen Magazine, now available at penmagazine.us, P-E-N-N magazine.us. And now our first guest of the evening is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero joins us each week from Des Moines, Iowa, the Des Moines Catholic Worker. And Chuck talked to Frank earlier, and now we're going to get to hear the conversation between Chuck Gregory and Frank Cordero.
Hello, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank. How are you?
Well, it's getting to be a hot day again in Iowa here. I'm not on shift, but I'm cleaning the Bergenhaus first floor. You know this place? This is the spot where you made a broadcast back last November, and I'm cleaning it so we can have a going away party for Julie Brown, our woman warrior who works for the Christian peacemaking teams in Kurdistan, Iraq. So all on deck to send her off tonight. So that's what I'm basically doing. And I'm now also doing the preparatory stuff, the writing of the articles for the next Via Pacis. And every time I go through this labor of love four times a year, I'm reminded of all the work we're doing. And what's left to do, and it's just a extraordinary agenda. You would wonder, how do people in Des Moines, Iowa, get in so much trouble? In my first 20 years of activism, I had to leave the state to find the trouble I needed, to get in. Now I don't even have to leave my town. You know, I got the wartime drone command, and I got the peacetime war on the planet, industrial ag, all centralized here. It's it just saves on miles. I can tell you that. And I'm now used to my own bed, or at least the county holding tank. And that's the story of a life lived. I don't know what else to say. I'm just pushing stuff out of the way so we can have this first floor. You know, if a guest like you don't come or we don't have a party, I never clean the place.
I see. Yeah.
And then, what else is going on? We put up that whole thing about the a billboard, U.S. Army.
Yeah.
Billboard being altered with a drones kill message.
Right.
And 5 days later, it's replaced with a pro-life America billboard. And I put out a press release for both of these things with photos. Not a peep. Nobody's interested. It's like it never was there. It's weird. It's kind of like what it is to try to talk about a drone command center in Iowa. Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it. But we're not going to give up. And even though the artist is anonymous, and I don't know who he is or she is, I would just say this is an invitation to let's keep telling the truth from the straight up.
Yeah.
And claim this space for truth. And down with the lies that money can buy.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. And that's why you're not on a radio station where millions of people are listening to this.
Well, that's true. Although they claim there's thousands of people.
Well, God bless the thousands. Stay tuned.
Absolutely. Never seem to talk back at us. I wish they would do that once in a while.
They're going to have to talk back to somebody, if not us on the radio. Everybody's got somebody to talk back to about what's going on.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, all right, brother. God bless.
Hey, I hope the celebration for Julie goes well, and
Oh, and still no word at the moment from Jess, except the last time we heard from her. At this point, I'm rather relatively used to that, but always mindful.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Got it. All right, brother.
Thanks again, Frank. We'll talk
all
to
right,
you.
Brother.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And now a public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Walmart, and Martha Stewart. We are now on triple secret orange alert. Pull the apple pies from the windowsills. Secure the baseball fields, the Chevrolets. Secure Grandma. Bob and Al-Qaeda have been spotted in the U.S. They are born in a small town in little pink houses, getting their thrills on Blueberry Hill, getting their kicks on Route 66. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio from Port Orange, Florida, with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Killing the Dream 50 years on. Being a politically, among other things, naive young man in circa 1968, this writer did not understand what the hell was going on that year. Having read the Playboy interview with Jim Garrison in 1967, before, of course, I got into the main reasons for buying the magazine, I was into the conspiracy theory of JFK's murder. Garrison laid it out pretty well, and I should have known better when MLK was shot down in April. Now it was a hot, sticky June 5th morning. My college term, the first one for me, was now over, and I was ready to enjoy the Brooklyn beaches and lovely Brooklyn girls, if so lucky. The Democratic primary campaign was in full swing, and quite honestly, my ignorance of things political was showing. I knew that many friends from Brooklyn College had worked for Eugene McCarthy, with some of them moving over to now work for Bobby, as RFK was referred to. The Vietnam thing was still far removed from me, as I had my cherished student deferment. Nobody I hung out with had been drafted, though two of my friends did sign up for the Air Force. We all saw the war being covered each and every night on the television news, and I only read the newspaper for the sports and horoscope. Such was my life that June 5th morning. Turning on the FM radio to hear some rock and roll music, the news came across that Bobby had been shot. The DJ put on Jackie DeShannon's 1965 hit song, What the World Needs Now is Love. I remember sitting by our bedroom window and looking out. Too much to take in that hot and sticky June morning. The radio and television shows had been interrupted to cover what had happened late last night at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles. No going to the beach today for me. No, I just stayed around the block and hung out with my friends, all of us trying to make some sense of it all. The television news told us that some Arab had killed Kennedy because of some political gripe about the Palestinian problem in Israel. Sadly, I knew nothing of all this. All I knew of Bobby was that he had come out against the Vietnam War and wanted to end it, as did McCarthy before him. LBJ had announced he was not running, and former Vice President Richard Nixon looked like the candidate for the Republicans. Nixon was not a favorite of many of my young peers, except, of course, those few who still supported the war. I knew he said he wanted to end it, but his party had a recent history with Goldwater in 1964 of being ready to A-bomb the enemy. That is what I naively knew of all this. The next morning, the news came out that Bobby was dead. Two major civil and human rights leaders were shot down only less than 5 years after JFK's murder. Something was not right here. I needed to find out. But few in the media would ever insinuate that both murders were the work of conspiracies. No, the real deep state, which controlled both the political parties and the mainstream media, does that sound familiar? Had decided it was time for the country to first mourn and then to move on. Well, perhaps conspiracy theories had been put on ice for a while, but the nation only became more divided over Vietnam. That is when this writer broke his cherry and began the slow process of growing up politically. Thank you.
And now, and now, cue the Rimsky-Korsakov, please. And now for another episode of Professor Rutherford P. Roswell's Conspiracy Corner. We find Rutherford P. Roswell sitting at home, getting ready to begin his weekly podcast from his basement, imitation cedar panel man cave. He has his computer and his headset and professional-looking microphone with the fireplace blowing in front of him and his English setter, Apollo, lying on the carpeted floor, feet straight in the air, sound asleep. Professor Roswell checks the time on the computer, sips his drowsy time tea, swivels in his chair and draws the Crown Royal single malt from the glass case, turns back, sprinkles a dash into the tea, and sets the bottle on the floor near his feet. All around on the walls hang dusty photos of Roswell and the people he has interviewed over the decades. He receives an email notification from the network telling him the show will start soon. He smiles as he types salutations to the many listeners now showing up in the chat room from around the world. Skagway, hello, Roslyn. Hi there, all. Sleep Mute, Sicily, Mayberry, Virginia City, hello. College Station, Beverly Hills, Barstow, Columbia Heights, Foggy Bottom, Rocky Top, Bear Creek, Sandy Holler, Alsace, Genoa, Venice, Vicksburg, hello, hello, welcome, hello. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And now with your host, Professor Rutherford P. Roswell, it's time again for Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Drowsy Time Tea, because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best. Just hold some hot tea in your tired hands close to your chest and slowly fall asleep. Sleep. Sleep. Maybe put the hot cup on the desk. Sleep. Sleep. Drowsy Time Tea. Forget about it. And sleep. You, stop whatever it is that you are doing, because it really doesn't matter. As long as a persistent lie about the JFK, RFK, and MLK murders persists in this country, nothing you do, working out, going to work, eating, sleeping, talking, none of it matters. It really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. None of it matters. You do not matter. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to all. I'm so glad you're here. Let's get right to it, shall we? It's true. It's all true. The conspiracy theories. I have to sit back, even me, and try to comprehend what that means, even after all these years. Anyone who believes in the latest fairy tale, Santa Fe, must also believe in Rudolph, Mrs. Santa, and the elves. It's all fake, a big hoax, such a gigantic lie, this life. I really don't think I can put my head around it, even yet, as they say. I'm trying. It means, wow. Just wow. Words really can't describe it. I can tell you that your newspapers are controlled in your television news, but those are just words. It's different. Much different to stop and actually realize what that is. I can tell you that your government is more like a mafia organization than a government, but Bobby Kennedy, 50th anniversary, we still hear on the TV and in the newspapers and radio about Sirhan Sirhan. Nothing of the evidence compiled in those 50 years by unpaid real journalists who could, would, and have been telling us. But still we hear the lie broadcast loud and clear for 50 years, right in front of us. Folks, the emperor has no clothes, not a stitch. He's been naked for 50 years and more, and yet something so important to our lives, to everything, will not and cannot be mentioned out loud in the cafe, in church, in the kitchen, in America. And so we know it's all true. What is all true? That it's all contrived. The conspiracies, we are told, are loony, and we know about the background about that now because of the CIA memo telling agents and compromised news agencies to deal with people like Mark Lane, people like Jim Garrison, people like Jim Fetzer, Kevin Barrett, and James Tracy. It's really much worse than we can imagine, than we dare to imagine, but I think we should try. And I think we'd all be better served by silence than by another heaping helping of information tonight.
Conspiracy Corner, sponsored by Drowsy Time Tea, because sometimes it's the best you can do. It's all you can do. You did your best. Forget about it. And just sleep. Well, how do you do, young Willie McBride? Do you mind if I sit down here by your graveside and rest for a while neath the warm summer sun? I've been walking all day and I'm nearly done. Well, I see by your gravestone you're only 19. When you joined the great fallen of 1916. Well, I hope you died quick and I hope you died clean. Willie McBride, was it slow and obscene? Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they play the fife lowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? And the beautiful wife or the sweetheart for life? In some faithful heart are you forever enshrined? And although you died back in 1916, in that faithful heart are you forever 19? Or are you a stranger without even a name? Enshrined forever behind a glass pane in an old photograph torn, tattered, and stained, fading to yellow in a brown leather frame. Did they beat the drum slowly? Did they play the fife lowly? Did they sound the death march as they lowered you down? Did the band play the last post and chorus? Did the pipes play the flowers of the forest? Now the sun shines down on the green fields of France. A warm summer wind makes the red poppies dance. The trenches have vanished under the plows. There's no gas, no barbed wire, no guns firing now. White crosses stand mute in the sand.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now we join, in progress, another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah, while they sleep on, through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with a message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplished after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. The entire Nutt administration has been busy as of late with organizing the annual summer picnic on the White House lawn with the theme this year, dollar signs, tanks, and boobs. All are working under the guidance of First Lady Imelda Nutt to get everything just right. From the dollar sign, seven-layer cakes with the Republican showgirls popping out extravaganza in the Rose Garden, to the U.S. Army tanks and only tanks in random home search parade, to go down every street in Washington, D.C. and end up with a 1,000 tank salute lineup on Pennsylvania Avenue with guns pointing out at the rest of America. Two, the 1 million boob points of light for America, the culmination of the big event, where 1 million colored boob balloons will be launched from the White House lawn, each with a winking light inside blinking, blinking high in the night sky, to spread out over the city and the nation, signifying what this country is all about. Join us next week for yet another episode of The Americans, and we will hope those big boob balloons will have finally landed, and we will see President Cosmo Nutt presenting a Medal of Freedom to the American Yahoo who found the boob balloon that traveled the farthest. And now, a message in a Boone's Farm bottle, notes we have received from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy.
From Richard Dolan, we hear, we cannot trust anything that comes out of the United States government's official mouth at all, not ever. Not under George W. Bush, not under Obama, not under Trump. The UFO reality is so deep, it is so revolutionary, it is so disturbing that it has caused so much profound criminal secrecy over an entire human lifetime. It's literally not possible, legally, to officially disclose this without a lot of heads rolling politically. A lot of people would be angry about being lied to for over 70 years. On top of that, you've got the revolutionary implications of the transfer of our energy paradigm, which certainly would happen in the aftermath of a genuine disclosure. Whatever these objects are using to travel, it's not petroleum. Whatever it is, it's going to be better than what we have, and that portends a complete revolution to our society in ways that are unimaginable to the power structure. Beyond that, there are countless ramifications to disclosure, all of which are revolutionary. And if there's one thing the hierarchical elite does not want, it's a revolution.
A message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Notes we have received from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy. Our next guest of the show is Azura Crispino. Azura Crispino joins us each month from Austin, Texas. Azura is a professor of philosophy at Austin Community College. She often chooses to talk about prison issues, prisoner issues. And Chuck talked to Azura a little bit ago and recorded that from Austin, Texas. And we're going to hear that now. Azura Crispino from Austin, Texas.
Hello, New American Dream listeners. I wanted to start off today by wishing you a happy Juneteenth. For those of you who are unfamiliar, Juneteenth is a holiday primarily celebrated in Texas and other southern states on June 19th of each year. So Juneteenth is June plus 19th. And the celebration is not that this is the day that slavery ended, but it is the day in 1865 in which the people of Texas were informed by Major General Gordon Granger that slavery had been abolished in Texas. And it should be pointed out that in certain cases, slavery continued to occur in Texas years after this pronouncement. So it's a little bit of an odd date, because basically what Texans and other Southerners celebrate every year is that this is the date in which African Americans could now know that freedom had come. And this year, PAPS, Prison Abolition Prisoner Support, and other organizations are calling on people to celebrate Juneteenth in ways that recognize that the 13th Amendment did not end slavery completely, that those who are incarcerated continue to legally be slaves. And so we are working with Malik Washington and others to make sure that there is an emphasis on our incarcerated enslaved loved ones on Juneteenth this year. So for those of you who already celebrate Juneteenth, great. We would just invite you to consider including a letter writing or postcard writing event to the event that you're already having. We would like to think of Juneteenth as National Right Your Incarcerated Loved One Day. So we are calling on people who have friends or family members who are currently incarcerated, to whom they have not written, to simply take a moment and write a postcard to them on Juneteenth. If you're already having a Juneteenth celebration, we are asking for you to consider to add a screening of the 13th Amendment movie by Ava DuVernay to your event, or to otherwise recognize the situation that incarcerated people currently face regarding their legal enslavement on this day in which we celebrate the news that slavery has ended. And I'm really looking at this from the perspective of the news that slavery has ended didn't necessarily mean that slavery has ended, but that it's important for us to celebrate that news. And it's important for us to celebrate it with a recognition that there are people who are currently incarcerated, who are legally realized, who are legally considered slaves under the Constitution, and that they need this support. So very quickly, let me read a few words to you from Malik Washington. Sisters and brothers, there are numerous activities being planned this year on June 19th, rallies, protests, direct actions, and more. Paps and I are intimately familiar and aware of the true impact that prisons and mass incarceration have had on people in America and beyond. Families have been broken and torn apart, relationships ruined, and the war on drugs has imprisoned an entire generation of people of color and the poor. We have decided that we want to help heal people and bring people together. Prison slavery is real. The toll that mass incarceration has had on our communities is real. Juneteenth will be here before you realize it. Put down that iPhone or smartphone for 5 minutes. Reflect on that loved one you haven't seen or spoken to in years, maybe even decades. I challenge everyone to step out of your comfort zone and reach out to a fellow human being. Make a connection. You may change a life or very possibly save a life. And of course, for those of you who don't have an incarcerated loved one, we at PAPS would be more than willing to introduce you to your new incarcerated loved one. So please feel free to reach out to us by going to iheartpaps.com or visiting us by email at iheartpaps@gmail.com. The second thing that I wanted to bring to your attention today is an urgent action on behalf of Rashid Johnson. Now, for those of you who've been listening to my segment on this radio show, you know that Rashid and I go way back, and that often Rashid has needed our help because of the repression that he is facing. For those of you who don't remember, Rashid was originally incarcerated in Virginia. He's been shipped around on interstate compact to the Pacific Northwest, and then he was for years held in Amarillo at Clements Unit, and then due to some retaliation, he was moved to Florida, where things have worsened for him in terms of conditions. So remember, his legal name is Kevin Johnson. His number in the Florida Department of Corrections is 158039. But let's get to some details of the serious abuse of Kevin Rashid Johnson. If you want to see this in print, it is available at papstexas.blogspot.com. On May 21st, 2018, Rashid was retaliated against for speaking up on behalf of a mentally ill prisoner named Murphy, who was being brutalized by the corrections officers at the Santa Rosa Correctional Institution. As Florida Department of Corrections, FDOC, officers were gassing and assaulting Mr. Murphy for making too much noise, Rashid raised his voice from inside his solitary confinement cell in order to be heard on the video and audio recorders on the cell block, and said that prison guards had been amusing Murphy by failing to provide him with needed mental health care, by withholding meals, and by responding to his mental illness with violence by gassing him 9 times and brutally extracting him from his cell. For this act, Lieutenant Marcus Stokes told Johnson, Rashid, that he was going to be put on strip cell, a punishment where everything in a prisoner's cell is removed, including toiletries and bedding, and he is left in solitary confinement with nothing but his underwear. Stokes and 3 other officers then gassed Rashid 6 times. After having been put in handcuffs and taken to the showers to clean off the residue from the gas attack, Rashid was brutally thrown down to the floor while Lieutenant Stokes repeatedly threatened to kill him and stated he was, quote, a marked man. So obviously this is an unconstitutional pretext for punishment, and it has led to interference with access to legal counsel in courts. One of the reasons that Rashid and I are so close is that he is a well-known jailhouse lawyer who is constantly writing writs on behalf of himself and others, who has continued to have legal resistance against the prison industrial complex. And he has several lawsuits that he is trying to bring forward. A letter clearly identified as legal mail sent by attorney Melinda Patterson to Rashid on January 22nd, while he was at Florida State Prison, was received already opened and resealed with a pink glue stick. On April 1st, legal mail sent by Rashid while at SRCI to attorney Dustin McDaniel was opened, read by FDOC guards, and then resealed with tape prior to delivering to the mailroom staff. For those of you who are unfamiliar, this is completely against legal mail policy, and it goes against the Constitution and the right for you to be able to defend yourself in court if you're in a situation where prison officials are reading your correspondence between you and your lawyer. You are not able to mount a good defense. Another letter sent by Rashid on April 1st via privileged media mail to his editor, Carol Seligman, was opened, read, and resealed by guards prior to being delivered by mailroom staff. These letters were delayed and received 2 weeks after the date they were submitted for mailing. Mailroom staff admitted that these letters were tampered with when responding to Rashid's grievances, and the grievance numbers are available online. Legal mail has also been destroyed in certain cases. Legal mail sent by Rashid to attorney Dustin McDaniel on April 17th was never received, is now missing, and was presumed destroyed by FDOC officials. Letter sent by Rashid to Carol Seligman, his editor at the Socialist Review, on April 5th, 16th, 17th, and 25th were never delivered and were presumably destroyed. Included in these mailings were three essays for publication detailing abuses inside the Florida Department of Corrections. We are asking for people to call the warden of Santa Rosa Correctional Institution, the general counsel of the Florida Department of Corrections, security operations on the Interstate Corrections Compact, which has to do with the fact that he's on Interstate Compact from Virginia, and the inspector general of the Florida Department of Corrections, basically demanding that all confiscated property be returned to Rashid Kevin Johnson, number 158039, to stop the interference with his legal and news media correspondence, to stop retaliation against him for exercising his First Amendment rights, stop the repeated cruel, arbitrary, and excessive punishment, and immediately transfer him back to Virginia. We would also add a demand that all prisoners who are suffering from issues of mental health should receive treatment and should not be gassed, and that those who stand up on their behalf should not be facing retaliation. If you're interested in making these phone calls and you would like the numbers of whom to call, I strongly urge you to go to papstexas.blogspot.com. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to email us at iheartpaps@gmail.com. The third thing that I wanted to talk to you today was a little bit about why prison abolition. And I'm going to go about this in kind of a different way than activists usually do. I'm going to ask you, if you could incarcerate anyone, who would it be? Maybe it's a killer cop. Maybe it's a Nazi. Maybe it's child molesters. Maybe it's rapists. But as prison abolitionists, we have to answer that question by saying, I wouldn't incarcerate anyone. Because the truth of the matter is that as long as one person is incarcerated, then we still have prisons. And a lot of times people will say, well, we need prison reform, but abolition, that's too far. We can't possibly live in a world where there are no prisons. And my answer to you is, yes, we can. Yes, we can. We can live in a world where we believe that every person is sacred, that every person is capable of change, that every person is better than the worst thing that they've ever done. So I ask you to be honest with yourself and think about the worst things that you've done in your life. And I know that that is a difficult conversation to have with yourself. You don't have to say it out loud. I just want you to think about it right now. The worst things that you've done. If you had been caught doing those things, if those things had been on national media, how would you be perceived? How would that have changed your life? And are you only the worst things that you've done? Now think about the best things that you've done and the best things that you are going to do in your life going forward. The problem with prison is that they have us believe that when someone has done wrong, that they need to be punished. And that they need to be punished because they are wrong, not just that their action is wrong. But unfortunately, as anyone who's ever dealt with a 5-year-old in a cookie jar that they're not supposed to get into will tell you, being punished teaches you that getting caught is the problem, not the action that you actually took. And also, punishment does not teach you what to do instead. So if I know that I'm not supposed to eat the cookie, but I'm hungry and the cookie looks really good, or I'm just thinking about chocolate, it's one thing to say, now, Susie, if you eat that cookie, you're going to get a spanking. It's a different thing to say, listen, sweetheart, when you are hungry and you're maybe craving a little bit of sweet, there's a fruit bowl there. And I want you to eat some fruit. And after dinner, if you still want a cookie, then we can talk about having the cookie. That's teaching somebody what to do instead. And there's very little, if anything at all, in prisons that does that. So I want us to take a moment and just imagine a world without prisons. What would that look like? Well, first of all, it would mean that if you have an issue with somebody, if someone has wronged you, that you and that person would be more actively involved in trying to figure out what needs to be done to fix it. That doesn't necessarily mean that you would have to face the perpetrator of the violence against you, but it would mean that you would have more of a choice and more of a say in how things are handled. Right now, when charges are brought up, they're not brought up on your behalf. They're brought up on the state's behalf, because the state has, as Nils Christie so eloquently described it in his 1970s article, has basically appropriated your conflict. And we don't want that. We want you to take ownership of your conflict. And I think you do too. So if you're thinking to yourself today, what can I do to abolish prison? The first thing that I want you to do is to own your conflicts. If you have a conflict with somebody, instead of calling the cops or trying to push off that conflict on someone else and thinking that that is going to resolve it, I invite you to take an active and proactive stance in figuring out what you can do, maybe with help, you may need help, people to help you, to resolve those conflicts. Secondly, I want us to think about a world in which we were actively preventing the things that we now think of as crime. A world in which everyone has adequate access to housing and food and clean water and education, transportation, and healthcare. Now that we've done that, and we've eliminated the root cause of many issues relating to incarceration, we can start talking about those interpersonal conflict crimes, right? The violent crimes, the sexual assault crimes, and really start to think in terms of what can we do to help this person rehabilitate? And for those of you who are thinking, but prisons at least keep people safe, they don't. They only shift the population that is possibly going to be harmed by this person, if we think of this person as being incorrigibly violent, we're only going to shift the population to other inmates and to guards, period. But this person, if they come out of prison, is going to come out more violent than they went in the overwhelming majority of the time. So the question becomes, what sorts of systems do we need to put in place in our society in order to help people rehabilitate, in order for people to be able to transform their situations? Especially when we're talking about people who, when they were young and misguided, did things that they've now come to understand were wrong and that they regret, but are wasting away, unable to do anything productive to try to fix the problem, either to their victim or to someone else who's unrelated to the situation but was harmed in a similar way. So when we talk about prison abolition as a long-term goal and a short-term goal, prison abolition can be as simple as writing a postcard on Juneteenth to somebody that you know who's incarcerated that you haven't talked to in a while. But it can be as simple as, instead of talking behind somebody's back and complaining about how they've treated you, to confront that person and say, listen, your behavior in this situation hurt me, and I want us to try to come up with a way to fix it. That's prison abolitionist too, because it lets us retake control over the conflicts that we have in our lives. So I invite you to think of the conflicts that you're having in your lives as opportunities for growth, as opportunities for transformation, and as opportunities for you to wrest control back from the hands of the state by fully embodying those conflicts and their resolutions.
Thanks, Azura Crispino, for inspiring description of what prison abolitionist, what prison abolition is really all about. I really I learned a lot from what she had to say. Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, where they were put in boxes, and they all came out the same. And there's doctors, and there's lawyers, and business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family in boxes made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. Coming up in our next half hour, we'll be hearing some poetry from Abba Bird and some very interesting thoughts from Mickey Zezima about the homeless women in New York City and this project that he's been involved in for a couple of years now to help them out.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Or the quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
We're pleased to announce our next guest, Ava Byrd. Ava Byrd is a poet living in Southern California. Ava was one of the first guests on our show back in 2011. Chuck talked to Ava earlier in the day, and we recorded that. Now we're going to hear the conversation between Ava Byrd and Chuck Gregory. Ava Byrd in Southern California.
Hi, Chuck and Mike. Happy summer. Thank you again for having me on the show, The New American Dream. I'm picking out a couple of poems for you and your listeners that I thought you might like. They're fairly recent. This one is called Circus Night. Circus, circus, these days of balancing acts, clowns, costumes, makeup, stripping strips, saved underwear, laundromats, motel ghosts, days of the strange, days gone by. Running hard, passed on the wage slave lives and lame game jives. Tired, sleep and get up, wired for sounds. Now, waking up, vibrations and pulses to just go, get out there and run into the lights and into the nights with purpose and freedom. Win all of the trees, we're with them, breathing free. And me to be, being me and you being you, and all of us living here together, happy and free. Okay, this one is called Happy About No Thing. It's time. Big bright, big city, big lights, and crazy nights, flying free, sitting pretty. In the hills, lost in the woods, in the hoods of fame and time and homes for no one less than coming from us with love and more, with freedom of thoughts and actions, always upcoming. The next big things are happening right now, right? And left are only two ways to go. Let's go out more. Let's get out and do it upright. Left turns on arrows, even when no one's coming. Let's go out into the lights, sailing through green lights, smiling, happy about no things, no thoughts or actions, stillness and reception. Ah, so nice. After the bustle of city highs and fun times in the sun, happy about no thing. This one is called Happy Trips. It was a trip, long and hard, wide and deep. We went off into the places of the mysteries, the unknowns, unbeknownst, maybe nots. We still went We got there. We went there big and came down smiling. We are here. We made it. It's mad, the big hills of way up theirs and been theirs more than a few times. I'm reminded that there's a message in this mess. I bet big on the gut. Once the income's coming in many forms, not just in cash, cows and things, there's so much more. There are so many frequencies believing on light showers and heavy nature, Mother Earth. Here, I came. Here to come to save the day by not eating animals or secretions from beasts. I'll just eat the limelight and be fine, happy and free. Hopefully everyone else is too, including you. And to birds, the bees and trees and all beings, waving and flying and just being free. And please forgive me. May all beings be happy and free. This is called Trainways. Big city, New York City, Trainways. Ways of paths of worker bees, strangers, love, alcoholics, strangeness, lots of types. Here we are in NYC, the city that, wow, it's crazy out here with all the PD, so many police and chiefs, still no security. It's time to rise, time to grow into new beginnings and old-fashioned endings. The beauty of so much time gone by. Yet here we still are together, forever inclined with the thought of heaven transcending. Dentists, doctors can't help me. Teachers can't teach me. I'm in my own world for the better, like we should have more gardens and farms and backyards and spaces between soils. Water the plants, please. You, yes, you are the one we are waiting for. We are the now. Here we are. Been there before, done that. But now, here, never been to some, but I'm still here. How about now? Is it better? More bright spots and crystals and flowers. I'm planting seeds. Every day is Thanksgiving. I'm just listening for some direction and light guidance. No religions, just being the one sending. The one sending healing and lights. That's just me. Sometimes, though, there's darkness. Who cares? It's not scary. It's a chance to sleep. It's a chance to say, ah, I can get out of here fast, get up and run, and really start driving. Driving out the beasts, the monsters, the demons of the past. Avoiding, like orange cones, driving around. Now in rear views, side mirrors behind. Looking beyond, beyond the past, looking out, out the windows, and into the soul of right now. All right. That was called Trainways. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again, Chuck and Mike, for having me on. I wish everybody happy summer, and can't wait to share again soon.
Thank you so much, Ava. It was great hearing those. You're really good as always, and we'll talk to you next month.
Okay. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
And now for another episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle. Buddy is patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's sitting in a grove of trees next to a rotting deer carcass. Can't see a thing, but he can hear that the highway is packed from all the noise. He cranks the Bolshoi Ballet in his earbuds as he snacks on the boiled potatoes he brought for break time and also sneaks a peek at the crayfish buckwheat blintzes he packed for his lunch. He's got his personal phone pressed to his ear, waiting for a call to St. Petersburg to go through, and the scanner is running, waiting for a message from the Kremlin. Buddy walks into Walmart wearing a T-shirt with the image of Donald Trump dressed as Che Guevara with the words, "Another Soviet satellite." He walks all the way through, picks up one carton of chocolate milk, and then all the way back, and walks out, right past the person checking bags who has fallen asleep just for a moment. Buddy is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candy for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle, sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax, also sponsors of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, The View from My Piroshki Cart. When your dogs tell you that the Russians pooped in the hallway while you were at work, and the Democrats tell you, no, we didn't rig the elections against Bernie Sanders, we did not commit treasons, dozens of felonies, we didn't conspire against the American people. Look, over there, Russians, we're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box. Our next guest of the show is Mickey Z. Mickey Zazima comes to us each month from Queens, Astoria, New York City. Mickey is a poet, a writer, and activist. His current project is working with the homeless in New York City. Chuck visited with Mickey earlier, and we're going to get to hear that conversation right now. Chuck Gregory in Fort Lauderdale and Mickey Z in New York City.
Well, I'd like to welcome now Mickey Z from Astoria, New York, our regular monthly columnist. And happy June, Mickey.
Happy June to you. Great to be here.
So I recently came across the your Amazon wish list for the for the program that you're doing, the Homeless Women in New York City. And I picked something off of it and sent you something. And the main thing that struck me is that this is kind of a fun way for people to help you out. You know, they look over things and something catches their eye as, wow, it makes sense that homeless women would need that, but I wouldn't have thought of it. So go ahead.
Yeah, well, it, first of all, thank you for ordering something. And it's called, the project is called Helping Homeless Women -NYC for New York City. And so folks could Google that and find the GoFundMe, the Patreon, and the Amazon wish list. Pardon me. But I'm glad you got that vibe from the wish list, because that was really the goal. GoFundMe, obviously, is about direct monetary contributions that I can immediately spend on items that I know are consistently needed or special requests. Patreon gives me a chance to plan a budget, because then I know in advance how many Patreon patrons are donating how much money each month that I get on the 5th. But the Amazon wish list appeals to people in a different way. And the closest thing I could compare it to is when you registry for when someone gets married or a baby shower or something like that. So I put items on the list, and they vary. There's some really consistent stuff, underwear, certain types of snacks, maxi pads, et cetera. But the other items vary dependent on need, but also on request. And I do find it, you know, what time of year. Like right now, sunscreen is on there. But I do find it fascinating to witness how folks choose what to purchase. I just got a delivery. Someone chose off the list two boxes of pens, a collection of small notebooks, and some plastic razors. And you almost wish that you could ask the people, like, what was it that resonated about this to you? But I mean, the razors perhaps are obvious, but maybe when someone sees pens and notebooks, on a list for a project for offering relief for homeless women, it's only then that what suddenly feels obvious, you know, you realize, wow, I had never really thought about that. Why wouldn't homeless women want to keep a journal or just have a to-do list, you know, job interviews, medical appointments, and so on and so forth? How, because many of them don't have cell phones. I mean, there are some who are able to pull it off. They get these cheap cell phones in order to take care of, again, job interviews, medical appointments, and so on. But for many of them, just simply keeping track of stuff, you know, is an issue. And if any of us imagine what would it be like, particularly anyone older than millennials, particularly, say, what would it be like if I had zero access to pen and paper? That to me sounds horrendous. So I'm fascinated to see what people choose. I'm grateful for them choosing anything, and it keeps it fresh for them, and it also keeps it fresh for me in the sense that I have to keep, every time something is purchased from the list, it disappears from the list, and then I have to decide, do I re-add it? Is it something that's recurring need? What do I add now? What goes towards the top? And the list becomes like its own little project in itself.
Ah, that's interesting that it disappears. Now, actually, I ended up choosing something that was related to an item on the list rather than actually one of the items, so it probably didn't disappear this time. But I got some pain patches, and this was something that resonated to me because my wife Lorraine is having a lot of pain in her back and her leg, and so I've been looking for ways to make that better. So when I saw that on your list, I thought, wow, how much worse would it be to have this pain and be out there on the street? It's a horrible thought.
Absolutely. And obviously I wish Lorraine the best and speedy recovery, or at least like a manageable situation. And it is something where, now I happen to be in the health and fitness field, on and off throughout my entire adult life. So my perspective on people is often different. Like I notice if I'm walking down the street in Manhattan, I may notice somebody's walking gait is in such a way that I say, oh, they might have a bad back. Or if they keep walking like that, they're going to have a bad hip. Like I'll notice things like that because it's a field that I'm in. But in general, I would guess the average person who's sitting all day at a desk, hunched over a computer or cell phone, isn't necessarily going to think, what is it like for that woman to sit sort of cross-legged on concrete in all kinds of weather for hours and hours every day? And because I've gotten to know these women, I know from, you know, their direct comments that quite often it's excruciating. It leads to muscle shortness, stiffness, and which then which starts to build on itself and create all sorts of pain. And anyone who's had any type of chronic pain, particularly low back pain, it doesn't take much, like you said, you looked at it and immediately it resonated because you're watching Lorraine in pain. And then if you say, wow, what would it be like if she had to sit on concrete all day in the heat or the cold or the rain or so on? And I think that in many ways, it makes it more personal. It makes it, it makes it more meaningful, perhaps, for people to have these options. And I guess the ultimate goal would be for folks to start, not the ultimate goal, but a goal would be for folks to start to requesting stuff, like saying, hey, I noticed that you don't have this on your list, but don't you think the women could use this? And then it becomes more of a collective effort that if other people begin suggesting items that I've forgotten or didn't think of, because obviously I'm just one person and I couldn't possibly have a complete, quote unquote, complete list. And so it becomes more of a collaborative, collective effort where I hope that the people helping me feel like they're part of a team and an integral part of the team. And that makes the whole process more enjoyable and more effective.
Well, have you considered finding them something to sit on.
Yes, and that's it's not unusual. I myself, about 6-8 months ago, got a new yoga mat for stuff I do at home, and I gave my old yoga mat to a woman that sits on the street. And actually, she's probably going to get many of the pay patches that you're sending me. And her response was so positive that I then spoke to some people in a couple of gyms where I do. Occasionally, I go into different gyms and train a client here, a client there. And so you get to know the employees. And I could find out when they're replacing yoga mats, or if they have, you know, yoga mats that are a little bit worn out that they don't want to put out on the floor. And so I've gotten a couple of basic donations that way and given out yoga mats. And the other thing that some of the women do is sort of like a plastic milk crate. If you sit it sort of, you know, on a long ways, you could sit on that, and therefore you're elevating you could get your knees at a right angle. And again, after 8 hours, sitting on anything is going to make you feel uncomfortable. But being able to switch from the milk crate to the yoga mat and back and forth is better than not doing that. And the yoga mat and the milk crates are something that I could ask. You know, I do ask store owners, and sometimes you just see New York's type of city where you could be just walking through the subway and see a milk crate just sitting somewhere. And I don't know what the story is behind that, but I'm certainly not going to let it just sit there. I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this to good use.
Well, it wasn't somebody's home or whatever, but
yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, as long as it seems crystal clear to me that I'm not taking somebody's property. But New York's a weird place like that, where you'll see unusual items completely out of context randomly somewhere, and you're like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to put this, I'm going to repurpose this because it's doing no good right now.
Yeah, right. yoga mats, I was thinking of something like camp chairs or, you know, camp stools or something.
That's a great idea. Those are the ones that fold up, right? I have seen I'm sorry, go ahead.
Exactly. Something that folds up, you know, so they can carry it around, but they can put it down and it would be a lot, more comfortable than sitting on the pavement.
Well, you know what? I'm going to look on Amazon to see what they have price-wise and if they offer any deals if you buy them in bulk. Because I think the camping chairs that have like canvas seats and all would be just too big and bulky to carry. And also possibly would lead, this is a whole other conversation. I don't want to go in a direction right now. But there are a lot of mean people on the street where they would either steal it, or they would make some comment that, oh, you're not really poor if you have a chair like that. But I do know that I have seen people who come onto the subway to play music, to busk for money, and they'll carry with them these little stools that are just sort of like little circles with a pad on it, and it folds up, and they'll plop it down and sit down and do bongo drums or play accordion or whatever it might be. And then I see they'll flip it right back up and connected to their backpack and continue on. So I'm going to look into that. That's a good suggestion, because if I even got just 4 or 5 of them to get, I think I could give out 2 or 3 rather quickly and then keep a couple on here at my place and always know this. If one of the women asked, I could say, all right, you'll have it tomorrow. So thank you for that suggestion.
Okay. it's a fascinating new world that you're seeing with this project.
Yes. I couldn't agree more, and I'm super grateful for it, because I'm a curious person to begin with, and I like to learn as much as possible, but I also want to help as much as possible. So that combination works, because I keep my eyes and ears open. I listen to the women. This week I got what to me counts as one of the greatest compliments I could get from one of the women. She thanked me for being a good listener. And particularly as a man, you know, that's a skill you have to constantly work on, you know, and so I try to listen. I try to hear what they need. And just like the way in our conversations, you'll say to me, oh, I never would have thought of that. Well, I have the same exact response maybe just a week earlier. And then I'm telling you. And so to me, it's like, I can then be a voice where I could say, hey, did you ever think of donating this or that? And it might influence people in other parts of the country or other parts of the world to say, oh, there's a homeless person I pass every day, and I do have extra pain patches, or I do have a little portable stool or whatever it might be. I'm going to ask them if they need it. And to me, that's the beginning of really, really true helping.
Absolutely. The whole idea of people sharing their resources in order to help people, it's something we all need to do and need to think about, but it's not glamorous. In some cases, it's even frowned upon these days, and that's just so wrong.
I totally agree. There's a lot of factors out there. I mean, when you ride the subways in New York City, there's a robotic computer voice that periodically makes announcements that are quite Orwellian. Things like, please be reminded, backpacks and other large packages are subject to search by the police. Like, it'll say that. But another one will be like, don't give money to panhandlers. You give money to charities instead. There are plenty, like basically saying it's dangerous. I've heard stories of people getting fines, like tickets, for giving money to panhandlers. So it becomes like this almost social programming, like be afraid of homeless people. They're dangerous. Ignore them or we will punish you. Like, and this repetitious voice telling you don't give. And then all you need is a couple of situations where particularly homeless men are very aggressive or they harass women. And you witness that, and then it becomes confirmation bias. And you're like, oh, it's true. I can't give this to them. Or the women tell me someone will come up and offer them food that they might be allergic to or just is really unhealthy. Like someone's like doggy bag fries. Soggy fries with their ketchup on it. And so they'll say, some women tell me initially they'll say no, thank you. And then they'll get the response like, oh, I see, you just want money for drugs. And so we as non-homeless people seem to constantly be looking for evidence to prove give us reasons to not help.
Mickey Z from Astoria, New York City.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Zero X E 0517
Retard.
talk about decentralization and bank annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, MyCoin, YourCoin, blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now, some recent news from the Nuclear Resistor, nukeresistor.org. Poor People's Campaign ties struggles for justice together. The Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, launched the day after Mother's Day with rallies and nonviolent civil disobedience at more than 30 state capitals across the United States. The campaign revives the vision of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1968 Poor People's Campaign that challenged the fundamental and interconnected injustices of racism, poverty, and war. To these triple evils, as King identified them, the 50th anniversary campaign has added ecological devastation as part of the common threat to humanity. Activist and author David Swanson, arrested in Washington, D.C., identified it as the first multi-issue coalition we've seen in years that properly takes on militarism rather than indulging the fantasy of a $1 trillion a year military coexisting with decent humanitarian and environmental policies. The organizing model for this, the first phase of the campaign, is a series of six weekly rallies and civil disobedience actions, each highlighting facets of the call. Phase one will wind up on Saturday, June 23rd, with a global day of solidarity and sending forth call to action mass rally in Washington, D.C. After the first 3 weeks of action, chronicled below are reports of over 1,000 arrests reported from 24 states and the District of Columbia. Each week, some civil disobedience actions did not result in arrests. The largest number of arrests were reported during the May 14th action in Washington, D.C., when demonstrators occupied First Street outside the Capitol building and refused to leave. 146 people were cited and released.
Also from the Nuclear Resistor, five people arrested on Memorial Day at Kansas City Nuclear Weapons Plant. Six arrested protesting role of Hanscom Air Force Base in nuclear war preparation. Read the full stories and more at nukeresistor.org.
And now it's time for Revolution College. Information for the Revolution offered Thursday nights in the basement of the abandoned Humanities Building. The Revolution will not be televised, but it will be offered as upper-level credit.
Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has said he doesn't believe Sirhan B. Sirhan, the 24-year-old Palestinian man convicted of killing his father, Bobby Kennedy, in 1968, carried out the assassination. He believes a second shooter did it. In an interview with the Washington Post published this weekend, Kennedy said he had spent months reviewing autopsy results, police reports, and interviewed witnesses who were there when his father was gunned down on June 6, 1968 in Los Angeles, California. He told the newspaper that he also met 74-year-old Sirhan, incarcerated in the massive Richard J. Donovan Correctional Facility, a California state prison complex in the desert outside San Diego. I went there because I was curious and disturbed by what I had seen in the evidence, said Kennedy, an environmental lawyer, the third oldest of his father's 11 children. I was disturbed that the wrong person might have been convicted of killing my father. My father was the chief law enforcement officer in this country. I think it would have disturbed him if somebody was put in jail for a crime they didn't commit. He said that after his research and his meeting with Sirhan after all this, he found out that he did not kill his father, but there was a second gunman who carried out the assassination. Kennedy, now 64, was just 14 when he lost his father. He said he doesn't know if his involvement in the case will change anything, but he wants a reinvestigation of the assassination. Bobby Kennedy served as a Democratic senator for New York from January 1965 until his assassination in June 1968. When he was a leading candidate for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. He was assassinated 5 years after his brother, President John F. Kennedy, was gunned down in Dallas, Texas, and 2 months after civil rights leader, the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., was killed in Memphis, Tennessee. The President's Commission on the Assassination of Kennedy, known unofficially as the Warren Commission, was established by former President Lyndon B. Johnson in November 1963 to investigate the assassination of JFK. The commission's final report concluded that former U.S. Marine Lee Harvey Oswald acted entirely alone in assassinating the president. However, many independent researchers, including American writer and journalist Stephen Lenman, are unconvinced by the official government account and argued that Oswald was part of a conspiracy to kill the charismatic 46-year-old president. They believe the CIA murdered President Kennedy, Bobby Kennedy, and Martin Luther King. Sirhan is still alive in prison. He had nothing to do with the killing of Bobby Kennedy. Lee Harvey Oswald had nothing to do with the killing of Jack Kennedy. The CIA killed Jack Kennedy. Lenman said to Press TV in October last year, referring to the 35th President of the United States. And Kennedy was not shot twice from behind, as the official report said. He was shot at least 4 times, from the front and from the back. And there was a bullet hole in the windshield of his limousine, and that was covered up rather poorly, but was covered up. Lenman said that Oswald was set up. And then he was assassinated. He was assassinated by Jack Ruby, who was eliminated also. And the moral of that story is dead men tell no tales, he observed. Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. You out-of-town guys sure think you're real keen. Think all of the boys here homespun and green. God damn it, you're all gonna die, oh Lord. God damn it, you're all gonna die, oh Lord. God damn it, you're all gonna die. That's from Texan Love Song, Elton John. I remember. You remember too, back in the day, as they say today. The winter of 71, summer of 74, right there, in there somewhere. If you die today or tomorrow, if your life flashes before you as you choke on a steak, go flying off a bridge or jump, you'll remember the round light flasher on the silver Christmas tree, watching that sucker go round and round for hours. You'll remember some other shit. You'll remember songs and being out driving around in a special old car, road hunting and drinking on a beautiful fall day. And shooting aliens, saucer flying fucking aliens. Maybe your buddy hit one. Then you don't remember anything but that after that. Dreamweaver buzzed in the dashboard. KSTP, Oklahoma City. Nothing around here except country and polka. AC tuned it a little. Fly me high through the starry skies, maybe to an astral plane. Still fucking buzz. It's too early. Gotta be dark at least. Best after midnight. Rick stuck his face even further into my face. Ooh, Clarisol. Look at that, I said, looking out my window, seeking a new smell. I downshifted, looked. Out in the stubble, a hawk stared at us, daring us to fight, like the boys from Stanton. Under one foot, a rabbit struggled with wide eyes. It stopped and asked us for help. Stop! Stop! Rick put a hand on my shoulder and one on the shotgun on the floor. I shrugged hard to get his hand off. I braked, then went. Fucking corner. His brother drowned yesterday. Fucking yesterday, he's out road hunting and drinking. Tom Corner was out swimming at the new lake. Brand new lake they made. He was swimming around out toward the middle. Guess he dived down or some seaweed shit grabbed his ankle. He couldn't get back up. Makes sense to me. I see how it could happen. Whole town was out there watching the fire department in this rowboat. I guess the fire department rowboat. They gaffed Tom in the thigh, yanked him up into the boat with the coffee thermoses and extra rope, blood spreading across the lake. Rick was there, standing right there, with me and AC, most of the other guys. Kenny, says Casey. PTTPRO. Power to the people, right on. He hands me a fresh can of Schlitz. Like some Zen bartender who just knew I needed one. He rolls down his window to toss two cans at a fence post. Left-handed. First hand. First can hits the top of AC's window, spraying shits all over the inside of my 57 Chevy. I swear. Holler. Ah, shit, says AC. He apologizes. We dab with hunting jackets, gloves, stocking caps. He finally nails the fence post. He played baseball up through Babe Ruth League. I slide it up to second, arranging my hands to steer and drink. Put my arm in my window and enjoy. Black and white. Bench seats. Radio works great. All the metal, thick, hard quality, no rust. Everything original, except the tape deck, tires, gas. A classic. I know it. I knew it the minute I climbed in after my dad brought it home for me. He found it by peeking in some old lady's locked garage. I tore the mud flaps off and those metal reflectors by the front windows. What are those for? Every shift, song, corner turned, a joy in this car. What's great is that I understand it. Maybe my dad made me understand, but I think I come up with understanding on my own. The mark a great teacher leaves is no mark at all. They don't make cars like that now. Ever hear anyone mooning over their old Lumina or Tercel? Accord? Guys have dreams about these old Chevys. They wish they had the sense back then to appreciate, same as their first girlfriends. The Schlitz is not cold. Maybe cool if you squeeze tight. AC's got sore knees because he's got cooler on his side. Rick's got the guns. We're all wearing red or blue flannel. The brown canvas hunting jackets are now everywhere. It's hot. Not really. It was hot. We walked one field, then we were thirsty and started drinking. I'm going to wait till it got really cold, almost too cold to touch the cans, but, well, we didn't. We get up before dawn on a Saturday to go hunting. We put on coffee, even if we don't drink coffee. Maybe we're hungover. We put on all these clothes, these big hunting boots, when tennis shoes probably be okay. Then the guns come up from the basement or out on the porch. Gives the whole thing gravitas. It does. Think our dads now think we're getting down to something serious and we might amount to something. I don't know why they think that. Past few hours, we've just been driving around. We see a bird, we almost stop and jump out to shoot. Past hour, just been Rick shooting out the back window. Aren't that many pheasants or me and AC'd be dead by now. having our eardrums blown out, big hole in our head from that. Rick also shoots at squirrels, crows, stop signs. Poor guy, he just wants to kill something so bad, you can't blame him. I'm sick of that gun going off in the car. My dad would kill me. It's fucking loud. I speed up whenever there's anything running around. It's like having a gun go off right by your ear. Fucking loud. Turn left to go to Broken Bridge. By now it was getting almost dark. That's how I remember it. It's a gravel road. Most of the gravel pushed off toward the sides and a long hump, so you have to stay toward the middle. Kind of a narrow road anyway. Broken Bridge is one of the places we would go swimming. There's a beach, sort of. Some places in the water that's called Spring Branch Creek, maybe North Fork. Water is deep in some places if you kneel down to piss. It's mostly a place where you can ask some girls if they want to go out to Broken Bridge or something. Part of your Broken Bridge, something like that. Might work. If it's night, maybe you can bring some beer. If it's a Sunday, it's pretty boring no matter what. Rocks on the path, stickers too, and glass, and most girls know that, so it's not a great place. And the bridge back then was wooden, high old iron arcing over the top. It creaked, and you could see the water through the cracks in the boards. There was barely room for two cars to pass. Graffiti decorated the flat iron. Fuck this, fuck that, fuck him, fuck her. Way up on the flat angle iron facing southward traffic. Way up where someone would really have to want to get up there. In smeared, thick, red blood was the legend. A legend is an old story. It's also an inscription, title, a motto, caption, an explanation. It's all of that. They would have to be shinning way up and along, hugging with both knees, not looking down. Maybe they're the curious type. Carrying a bloody arm in their teeth. Grab the iron with one hand, leaned way over to smear the blood words with the arm paintbrush. Stories about escaped lunatics. Takes it in one hand, he's writing upside down. All those people write on bridges for cars to see, they're all writing upside down. Not sure people understand that. Maybe it'll just take time. They said the man who wrote on Broken Bridge was escaped from the state hospital on the other side of town. He would have strained with all his might and wrapped his legs tight. If he was afraid of heights, that goes to show how bad he wanted it. He wrote in big, thick, bloody letters. You know, I actually visited the state hospital on a Catholic grade school tour. There were lots of people around in nurses' uniforms with droopy eyes like Deputy Dog and cigarettes hanging in their lips. Industrial women, mostly what you get around here. They had a farm where the inmates could milk. The milk barn was clean, smelled like fresh hay. I remember one guy in there, he was big, with big, really dark black hair. He picked me out of the group to come over and milk the cow. I didn't want to, but I did it. Girls and everyone else giggled when I grabbed the things. So if he was escaped, with nighttime, how'd he get out there? It's a lot of miles on foot. Through a xenophobic, nosy town. With nosy provincial police officers looking for him, who haven't been to college or anywhere, just driving around. And a lot of those type people aren't from around here. How would he know about Broken Bridge anyway? And to climb in the dark with a bloody arm in his teeth? Well, he really was into it. All by himself. Crazy, lonely man in a strange land playing his crazy game with sirens in the distance. I always wonder if they know they're crazy. Like if a kid with Down syndrome knows what he's got. I'm bad. I live on 6th Street. I'm crazy. Or don't you know? He's up high on a jagged, rusty piece of iron. He hears the pitter-patter. He stops. Eyes wide, he looks down, gets a little dizzy. He grips tighter with his knees. His heart pounds. He bites down on the arm, tastes the blood, feels the bone, swallows, lets it run down his chin. He sees a coyote trotting down the middle of the bridge. It crept along kind of sideways, tongue out, looking about 2 feet in front. Passes under him without looking up. By the light of the orange full moon over the trees and the river and the retards, the wild man swung down, sweat stinging his eyes, and he wrote. All his heart, his soul, he wrote. He felt those words, pulled them from the first memories of childhood to this very moment. Like Solzhenitsyn, Dickens, Steinbeck, Faulkner, Dostoevsky, he wrote. Behind enemy lines, like King in the Birmingham jail on toilet paper, he wrote. Fuck you! That's the news from Moonrock Lake. For all the police and soldiers are thugs. All the journalists and Democrats are cowards. And all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back here next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And remember, the Revolution Radio Network is a listener-supported network, and they do deserve your support. And, hey, it's the beginning of a month, so they're starting up a new monthly goal, trying to get to that goal. So, hey, be a good time to head on over there, freedomslips.com, and make them a nice donation. They've got some cool stuff they'll give you if you make a big enough donation. So what the heck? You'll feel good too. All right. Thanks again for listening. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thanks, Chuck, for all you did to make the show possible, putting together, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 recorded interviews. Thanks for all that. And the sound was great. Everything worked out. How you make that happen, I have no idea, but thank you. Please visit the New American Dream website, where you will find information about all of our regular guests. Also, the show archives, newdream.us. Also, the Israel issue of Penn Magazine is available, PENNmagazine.us. And if you would like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314, and support their work for social justice, work with the poor. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hochstrung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
The road is long, with many a winding turn that leads us to who knows where, who knows where. But I'm strong enough to carry him. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. So on we go. His welfare is my concern. No burden is he to bear. We'll get there. For I know is heavy, he's my brother. It's a long, long road from which there is no return. While we're on the way to there, why not share? And the doesn't weigh me down at all. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. He's my brother. He ain't heavy, he's my brother. Good night, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
And it looks like we're dead on the air here, so I'll take over for just a minute. This is David Dubine.
You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Mini Ice Age Conversations on tap here for the next couple of hours. We're going to be talking about massive Earth changes, and also I'm going to be bringing on Ben Shields.
We've talked
before a couple of times about different political situations in the world and how the media is trying to deflect away from rising food prices. Ben's the creator of the Right Media,
the greatest night of our lives,
on Facebook, and also runs the rightmedia.org. I'm going to be getting him on the line in just a minute here.
Your life, you won't regret walking out, letting them get the best of you.
Well, I'm not going home.
We've got too far!
And I'm going to stay right here and fight for this lost cause.
A day may come when the courage of men fails, but it is not this day.
The line must be drawn here, this far, no farther.
I'm not saying it's going to be easy.
You're going to work harder than you ever worked before.
But that's fine. We'll just get tougher with it.
If a person grits his teeth and shows real determination,
failure is not an option.
That's how winning is done.
Believe me when I say
we can break this army here
and win just one for the Gipper.
But I say to you, what every warrior has known since the beginning of time,
you've got to get mad.
I mean plumb mad dog mean.
If you would be free men, you must
fight to fulfill that promise. Let us
cut out their living guts
1 inch at a time.
And they will know what we can do.
Let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions.
You're like a big bear, man.
This is your time.
Seize the day.
Never surrender.
Victory or death.
Patch the Chicago.
Who's with me?
Clap!
All right,
let's fly.
And gentlemen in England now abed shall know my name is the Lord. But I
tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
our Independence Day.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. One world coming together to bring freedom home. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We've got to stop them. They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be